Welcome to the second hour of Uncommon Awareness. We have been speaking this morning with Paul Fox. He has a practice. It's called sacredjourneytherapy.com. He's in Ontario. And Paul Fox was a man marching upwardly on the corporate ladder and one day realized it was killing him. He was dying, not living. He described a huge hole, but he just could no longer ignore. If you missed the first hour, listeners, please get the archive because this is a tremendously inspiring story. It's a story that I think so many of us can identify with. This set him on the path he's on today. He's a psychotherapist with a profound understanding of the internal needs, desires, and unmanifested dreams we have until we decide that that's really what life is about, exploration, expansion, and continually reaching in to be who we are, not who others would have us be. Now, again, I gave you his website. We had left off with you really kind of talking about, we were talking about a lot of things. But, you know, we made that point in the last segment about fear and risk, and you had us sitting at a point in the future on a porch looking out.
Right.
And, you know, what are we going to say about our lives and the things that have happened in our lives when we reach that point in life where, you know, we're going into that good night? Why don't you kind of pick up right there and further explain?
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So, that analogy, you're looking forward into the future. There are kind of three scenarios, and the first two were, first, boy, that was a crazy thing. Why did I ever do that? And we laugh about it. The other one is the one that I look forward to more, which is, wow, that was such a profound change in my, had such a profound effect on my life that, you know, it just completely changed direction. I understood so much more after that and those types of things, like a real opening.
Right.
And then the third option, which I think is the most unfortunate one, is, you know, I never did any of that stuff. Remember, I had this chance and I had that chance, and I really just held back because I was afraid. And here I am today thinking, gee, if I had it all to do over again, I think I might try that or I might try that. How bad could it have been? And that's, I think, the one option that I'll just say in my life, I don't want to end up there. There are some people that do pick that, and that's their choice, for sure. But I think there's so much more juice in life, and there's so much more interest, and there's so much more joy and capacity for love when we pick that leading edge that,
right,
that could turn into something just amazing.
That's right. Now, I have a question for you because you're involved in family counseling, and this is something that's come up on the show over and over again. And it sounds, I'm sure you and your wife had your challenges after you made that decision.
Yep.
And when you're working with families, it's not unusual for one person within the family structure, you know, to kind of undergo the experience that you underwent. And then, you know, the last thing that you want is to have your family abandon you or to abandon your family, and that you have this drive, you have this desire, you know things can and should be different for you. And how does that kind of come into play in terms of the family counseling you do? How do you help couples balance this out?
Yeah, it's a tough one because what can tend to happen is one person is in transition. And when that takes place, the other spouse, then it's really important that they hold space and are the grounding and are the supporting structure while one person is changing, and to have understanding and compassion while that takes place. And then expect and understand that the roles will shift. So the roles will shift to the other spouse at one point where, for example, when I'm changing and my wife is supporting and being loving, and, you know, as I walk away from my job, then there's a time when I have to ground things, and she's in transition and she's changing and she's growing and approaching her leading edge. And so in a family structure, it is really important to understand that each one of us is unique, and we go through these growth spurts in a unique way, but we want to listen to our partners, we want to listen to our children, we want to listen to our parents, and try to understand and try to be attuned to what's happening in their lives so that we can either take on the role of being the grounding stable force, or be the one that's taking a risk. And that way the family grows.
Right. But this, in a way, this kind of assumes that the family members are on the same board in terms of the recognition of the need for growth.
Right.
How do you help people if one partner is not recognizing the need for growth? No, everything's just fine. I like things just the way they are. And you're kind of dying because you know that things need to be different. Can you just offer some advice for how one can begin to negotiate with the partner who doesn't have that interest, that really basically says, no, things are just fine?
Yeah, that is a really tough one. And in my view, it just down to timing of things. So we all change, but we all change according to our own particular schedule and timing. And, you know, at times if we try to force things too quickly, it just doesn't work anyway. It's like somebody can go through the motions, but it's really not effective. So there are times when that happens where one person is changing, the other person just will not change, will not hear it. You know, you're changing, you're going crazy, you're ruining everything, you know, all these kind of judgments. And it's a real challenge. I wish I could come up with a way to say, well, you know, do it this way. But communication is the way, you know, to be able to share the fact that both people do love each other, they're in different parts of their lives, they're growing at different paces. But if one partner just digs their heels in, you know, it's a very challenging situation for sure. You know?
Right. Now, how do you discern when hypnosis or shamanic journeying or remote viewing or any of the other esoteric skills you've acquired, how does this get integrated into your practice? Does a patient or a client say to you, I think I'd like to try this? Maybe people know something's not right, but they're not quite sure what the next right step is for them. How do you integrate this?
Yeah, okay, well, that's a good question. So I integrate in a variety of ways. So let me just go back a little bit into the world of Reiki. So one of the things I learned in Reiki was this thing that we call tracking. And so tracking is this very strange thing where I might be, somebody's on the treatment table, and I have my hands on. And what happened to me initially was things like I'd get this sudden flood of emotion. Or I would get a headache, or I would get, I don't know, my leg would hurt or something. And then very shortly after that, the person on the table would describe to me, you know, how they, or they would burst into tears, or they would describe how they had hurt their leg when they were a young child, or something like that. So what's happening in that case, and of course it goes outside of traditional medical models, but what's happening in that case is somehow the two of us are attuned enough that I get a feeling of what's happening within their body. So initially when I learned that, this was, you know, in the world in the time when I was still living primarily in my left brain and trying to understand the possibility that some of this right brain stuff, some of this intuitive stuff, the potential that I could connect to somebody energetically was starting to manifest. And so that was an example of a thing that we call tracking in Reiki. Now, what can happen then, say I'm sitting in a session with somebody and I'm listening. First of all, I have to just really, really listen intently to who they are and what they have to say. But I'm listening with my entire body. I listen with my eyes. I listen with my stomach, with my heart, with my skin. And as I sit, even though their words are saying one thing, I may hear in a tone. So they may say, oh, I'm fine, everything's wonderful. But I can hear in that tone that they're not. Or I can feel in my stomach that they're not. Or I can feel in my heart that they're not, that there's fear or that the breathing changes. So that's one way in my practice that I integrate some of the esoteric things that I've learned is this.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question. We have we've had other guests on the show again. There's been a lot of emphasis, particularly because I'm interested in this, the emotional body. And
yeah.
You just said a really profound thing, you know, listening with your eyes and your body and your skin. And one of the tools that's become, you know, that's gaining greater recognition is the narrative, as they call it. So you're basically, you're holding heart space. This is from the work of the Heart Path practitioner. You've mentioned this, and this is so important in terms of holding space to allow what is be communicated to you. So the narrative gives you some indication of how out of sync a person's thoughts and feelings might be, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of your task then is to gently guide them to a recognition of what they're actually feeling.
That's a big piece of it for sure. So the words could be "I'm fine," and they're sitting with a smile on their face, but really inside their heart is broken. They're crying, but that's not coming out on the outside. And that conflict causes physical distress for sure, causes illness, causes our immune systems to break down. Causes all kinds of things. So even just coming to the awareness of, you know what, I don't feel good. You know, I feel really angry. You know, I feel really sad, or I feel really resentful about these things that have happened to me. Just to be able to get there is a really profound piece of healing for some people. It's the beginning of the journey.
Right, because it's acknowledging what is true for you. It's allowing yourself the experience that you're, you know, it's not judging your reaction, your experience, your emotions. It's basically, this is what they are. And when we can really allow ourselves, I believe, to acknowledge, like for me, one of the things that was key in my life to acknowledging was fear. Just, I couldn't believe, you know, once you begin to recognize it, it's so insidious. It's tricky. You know, it's really tricky.
Yeah.
And because you may think you're okay. You may think that, no, I've got courage. I can handle this. And you begin to find out that, for me personally, just how many of my decisions, even in terms of how I might choose to conduct a conversation with someone, fear was always lurking there. What are they going to think of me? How are they going to respond to this? And as you said, it's always that feeling we're not adequate, we're not normal, because people around us don't appear to be thinking like we do or feeling like we do. There's our music, listeners. We're taking a break, and we'll be back, because I have a question about the immune system, or a comment I want to make, and a question I want to ask Paul about immune system functioning. See you in a couple moments. In the last segment, Paul was sharing with us how the work he does is really about, through his practice of Reiki, how he tunes into somebody with every sensory organ and with his intuitive openness to discern the difference between what someone is saying and what they are communicating from their, let's just call it, emotional body. And you brought up immune system, Paul, and I want to make this point. You know, stress has become a sort of wastebasket term. Most people have come to associate it with something that might be psychologically noxious. But stress is a very strong physiological response to anything that takes us out of balance. And we're seeing unprecedented numbers of conditions and diseases related to immune system breakdown. And I just wanted to make the point, listeners, that stress and the immune system are so intimately intertwined as to you cannot live in a state of high stress for too long without it having a detrimental impact on your immune system. Our physiological mechanism of defending us, you know, against, you know, the world, real threats, as they call it. In your estimation, the numbers of people that come to you, how bad has stress gotten in your practice? What can you say about this one word, this one condition?
Stress is, it's epidemic. I mean, it's something that has such a profound effect on everything that we do. And yet it's this underlying thing that we have learned to almost accept. So stress is a funny thing. We need enough, but if we reach a particular threshold, which most people are well beyond, it actually puts us into the fight or flight mode. And when we're in the fight-or-flight mode, parts of our body shuts down, and research has shown all of this to be true, but parts of us shut down. So, in other words, if I'm in the fight-or-flight mode, there's no reason for me to think about things too much. I just have to protect myself. So, in other words, my cognitive ability just drops right off. It's really difficult for me to think about new concepts, to be creative, to do anything like that. The other thing that shuts down or starts to go away is my capacity to be socially engaged. So if I'm worried about fighting or if I'm running away from the saber-toothed tiger, as it were, who cares about social engagement? I'm about to die. So, I mean, that sounds drastic, but many of us live in really, really stressful situations that put us into this fight-flight mode, and it affects every part of our life. It affects, as you mentioned, our physical being. So our immune system breaks down. The hormone levels in our bodies go out of balance. Our brain chemistry gets out of balance. It's just really a bad thing. You know, I can't say it in any more terms than that. I don't think it's just bad stuff.
Right. Well, I wanted to bring it back around to one of the very first things you said when you had to learn how to breathe. And this is so important because one of the things that I attempt to do and I suggest others do when they're feeling stress is to sit down and simply breathe. You know, expand your diaphragm, stimulate that parasympathetic, that rest, digest, and repair mechanism. And the first time, have you heard of heart math? You know, the freeze frame where you can hook yourself up and it'll measure heart rate variability and coherence. Yeah. Well, I had a colleague. I'd left medicine. I was working as a consultant. I had opened up a health center, and she did biofeedback, and she and I rented space together. And I had been doing breath work and thinking that I was relaxing. She put me on the device, and there was just no way I could create coherence, even in what seemed to me to be a more relaxed, receptive state. My nervous system was just on fire. Just on fire with this fight or flight. So why am I making that point? This is something that I really think people, you can't just sit and breathe. You have to get yourself into a state of mind that enables you to release, you know, some of this autonomic reactions to the, so it takes practice.
And yeah, absolutely.
And yeah. I think breath work is a really powerful way to reduce our stress response.
Right, and so the practicing of breath work, then it helps our nervous system to calm to a certain extent. But then also as we do that, so basically in taking on a meditative practice, contemplative practice of some type, then allows us to calm the mind, calm the body through breath, and to just, you know, de-escalate from the stressful world that we live in. Yeah. And when that happens, strange things start to happen. So our health increases. We become more, we have more vitality.
Right.
It's amazing. We come up with creative ideas.
Right. There are music. We're going to break, Paul. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Paul if he can just maybe give us some examples of people he's worked with, what that transformation or transition was like for them, maybe some of the decisions they made. In the last segment, listeners, Paul was sharing with us about the fundamental healing properties of breath. And, you know, breath is historically recognized in many wisdom teachings as the essence of life itself. We can have a relationship to breath that opens us in unexpected and desirable ways. So, Paul, I have a question for you, but I want to ask you if there's any other thoughts or anything else you'd like to share on breath with listeners before I ask my question.
Well, just to that, it is fundamental, and it is so part of who we are. You know, we believe that we can breathe because we're alive, and so we think we're fine. But really, there can be a whole investigation into deeper and deeper aspects of breathing that can really help the unfolding of who you are. So by focusing on it, lots of positive things can come out. And so I really encourage people to do that.
Right.
I know of
a beautiful little book called Free Your Breath, Free Your Life. I can't think of the name of the author right now, but I picked it up years ago, and it's been remarkably helpful. Although, I got to be honest, it's been a while since I attended to breath specifically. I'm feeling inspired. I'm assuming you do the work you do because it works. And I see more people willing to step away from societal expectations and ideas about what life should look like. But I'm wondering what you're experiencing in your clientele. You know, when someone chooses to work with you, are you seeing that they're making external changes in response to their internal changes? In other words, are you seeing people make changes similar to your own? Are you seeing people take really kind of right turns off the path they've been on and pursue a different path?
Yes and no. So I kind of see two different types of clients. One type of client would be somebody who says, you know, this is my life right now. I'm really interested in moving forward. You know, there's a cutting edge of some type that I'm going after, and I really need some help in finding that and helping to push me further. That's one type of client. Another type of client comes and says, my life is not working. There's something wrong. You know, I've been fired again. This is my fifth relationship in a row. You know, all those types of things. Or I have some medical, physical medical things going on and interventions. And so those are the types of things that people come to me with. And when we work together, the people that will embrace some kind of change, that will look at the causes, tend to see results, for sure. But there is a percentage of people that just don't want to go there. The fear is too great, the timing is not right, and it just isn't for them at that time. Now, it doesn't mean it isn't going to happen sometime in the future, and it doesn't mean they won't come back to me, or they might not go back to a different practitioner, you know, 5 years from now, and then the process start. But in that moment, it's not going to work for them. For the people that it does work for sure what I see is the change in their relationship to things. So relationship to themselves, primarily, which then fuels their relationship to everything, to work, to money, to relationships with people, to spirituality. It's their relationship to that changes. And when that happens, things start to shift in people's lives. And that could be different employment, different relationships, and that type of thing. Does that make
right.
sense based on the question?
No, it does. It does. Thank you. And basically, just like any, you know, a psychotherapist in integrity meets people where they're at. You don't have an agenda for someone. You're simply right. there to assist them in identifying, you know, in meeting the needs that they identify. You can't push someone to take on more than they're willing to embrace. You know, that's just the bottom line. Are you seeing in terms of your colleagues, this is kind of curious, is there a paradigm shift within the profession itself? Are things moving towards a more expansive view of how people can be helped? Because, again, I've had other guests on who are talking about integrating some pretty novel ways where they just talk about the heart path, you know, holding space of compassion at all times. In Canada right now, is there a movement among your profession, or are you still one of the very few that are doing this?
That's a good question. You know, I'm definitely doing it, and there are others locally that are doing it, that are kind of on the leading edge or the fringe. There are some also that are much more traditional, and there's a place for that. But I would say it's opening up. It's opening up to this possibility that there's more going on than just a physical body sitting in front of us that we have to kind of push through a square hole and do this particular method. And then when you come out the other side, you're either successful or you need medication or something like that. You know, I think some of the more traditional ways of looking at working with people where we only have one way of doing it, those are starting to fall by the wayside for sure. And people are integrating more and more and more things that are helpful for individual, unique people, which we all are. So there's no sense shoving me through a square peg hole if
right.
it's not going to help me.
Right.
So I do see that with many of the colleagues I associate with, for sure.
Right. Now, being trained as a shaman, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
But
the thought just came to me, training, because this is what I am also seeing, that there's, in other words, the profession, let's just take the profession of medicine, there is this, there are more physicians willing to embrace an integrative, a more expanded view on what it means to be healthy and human. But it seems to be a greater divide. In other words, the traditionalists are digging in. And, you know, so the chasm between, you know, there's less, I would call what I would call integrative therapies, and people are kind of setting themselves up on one side or the other. So I see it becoming more polarized, but that's just me in this area. That's not, I can't speak to the, you know, the profession as a whole. I'm seeing greater polarity, but I'm seeing more physicians walk over to the other side of being being a patient advocates, of doing what works, of seeing the person as a unique individual entity and a willingness to work with them around their uniqueness. So I do think there are changes, but I also see a greater polarity coming up.
Yeah, I think we can see that in lots of different things in the world, not just in healing, different healing modalities. But, you know, really what we're talking about is embracing this idea that instead of this is correct and that is not correct, we're kind of seeing this idea that there could be kernels of truth and wisdom in each one of these different traditions and each one of these different ways of doing or being, and that we could actually embrace all of them, not to exclude any of them. So there is wisdom in, you know, the traditional Western model. There is also wisdom in the Eastern models. And so if we integrate those, if we bring them together, if we say that we can bounce back and forth between the two, then we're integrating. We're more, in my view, we're more healthy and we have more options.
Right.
And for sure, I think that's what a lot of people are doing. But in saying that, there are also groups of people that are just kind of digging their heels in and saying, you know what, I was taught this way. If you show me a different way, it kind of challenges everything that I've believed.
Right.
So you're saying that I'm wrong. And really, that's not true. It's just saying you hold a piece of wisdom, but there's a bunch of other stuff, too, to think about.
So right.
This
so it's,
and
that's,
that.
That's right. And I have said to people, because I don't, I will do consulting from time to time if people seek me out, but I'm not, you don't have a shingle hanging out any longer. And so people say, well, who do you recommend? And I'll say, so what's important to you? And I said, I recommend you find someone who will acknowledge what's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go to a doctor, and if you're going to spend all your time together arguing with the doctor about what, you know, how you want to proceed, you know, you don't want to do drugs, you want to, then that's not the right doctor. It's not the right practitioner. So first identify what it is important to you, and then interview your practitioners to find out if someone is willing to acknowledge your values as having any meaning in the relationship. Now, I want to ask a question because I have had several shamans on the show that I know that it's a very, again, people can take shamanism and work with it a multitude of different ways, but do you ever do shamanic journeying for your patients?
Yes, and the way that we work through that is that it would either come up as an option. So they might ask about it and say, you know, I understand you do that kind of thing, so what does that look like and how can we do it? So we could do that. Or I might suggest that to the client, say, you know, here's a way to access some information that could be helpful for you, so we could try that. And I also work with groups of people where, you know, in a workshop through a day where a group of people would journey together, do individual journeys and journey together. So I find that helpful also.
Right. Well, you do offer an incredible variety of workshops. Which in your, you know, in the time that you've been doing this, which are the more popular workshops? Because you've got several of them here.
Yeah. Well, teaching Reiki is fairly popular. Also the shadow workshop is quite popular.
I was just seeing this because, yeah, I just wrote an article called Shadow and Light.
I'm
interested in that booger called The Shadow.
And so the shadow is really quite intriguing. It's quite amazing. You know, we have this part of us that we're afraid to let out. And we spend a lot of energy kind of holding down a part of us. So that would be our dark shadow, to hold this part of us down, which we don't want others to know about. whatever that happens to be. For example, I might be a terrible driver, but I don't want people to know that, so I'll spend a lot of energy pretending that's not true. And there's another aspect to shadow, which is kind of a light shadow, which is I hide the greatness that I have. Mm-hmm. And there are quite a few people that can do that. They hide their greatness, and it takes energy to do that. So when we release our shadow, when we acknowledge it, when we embrace it, it releases tons of energy for us to move forward, to be more creative, to be more loving, nurturing, compassionate.
Right, I think I can't remember the exact quote. Marianne Williamson says, you ask yourself, who are you to be bold and courageous and beautiful? And, you know, she goes through a whole list, and at the end quote is, who are you not to be?
Yeah.
You know? And that's just it. A lot of us, I was brought up with a lot of repression. And as I began to do shadow work, I was really terrified of it because it was my belief that I was going to find these deep, awful, awful things about myself.
Right.
And you just said that more recently it's gone to light shadow work where it's like, what am I not allowing myself or for anybody? You know, encouraging people to please, there's so much more of you that you've yet to meet, you know, so we just have to get through that little obstacle called the shadow. We're taking our last break of this morning. We've been with Paul Fox of SacredJourneyTherapy.com. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up. Okay, it's that time of the morning when we're wrapping up. We've been here this morning with Paul Fox, SacredJourneyTherapy.com, a very individualized approach to helping heal the human heart and spirit, basically based in a large part on his own experience of life. So he has taken on the role of being teacher, mentor, helping to pull others over into I guess we could call it his world, if they're willing to come along. And,
yeah.
You know, Paul, I really do think we're on the brink of fully coming into the realization of what we actually are and how creative and beautiful humanity is. But the industrial age really pushed us into a very material comprehension of life. And what we're seeing, you know, all the chaos around us is just really showing us the unsustainability of that, the folly of that. So if you want things in your life to change, you have to change things in your life. But someone could be listening to us this morning, very interested in the work you do, but not anywhere close to you. Do you want to just kind of finish up by maybe sharing with listeners if they can identify with your experience, if they want to move forward, but they're trying to figure out what to do with this. Do you just want to end up with some general advice for people who feel themselves right on that edge?
Yeah. The thing is that we can suffer alone, and that's an option, but you don't have to pick that choice. It doesn't have to be a hard thing like that. So really to step forward, to contact somebody, to talk to them, to start to open yourself up to different ways of being in the world, different ways of thinking about things. And a really good way to do that is, there's a lot of stigma attached to seeking help or seeking advice or talking to people, but I really advise doing that. I advise there are many, many, many different modalities to get involved with. The most critical part is to find somebody that you really feel comfortable with, that you trust, that you can form a really good bond with, a mentor, like I was talking about with Bernard, somebody that you feel safe with, and it's that relationship that then can help to fuel and support, and then fuel you to move forward. But it's really hard to do all by yourself. And I just encourage people to step out, take that risk, contact, a therapist close to them, contact me by, the internet or email or Skype. But there are lots and lots of really good practitioners, and there's no need to suffer. There's no need to feel alone. There's lots
right.
of potential.
Because even though we're talking about personal development and personal evolution and growth, we there really is a synergy in relationship, bonding with someone who has traversed the path before you, who
right.
can help you to release your fears, release your doubts, release your, all of those reasons we have for not really embracing change. And I think that's the pivotal piece, is we're really coming into an age of relationships in a very different way than what we've seen, before, in terms of how we support one another, letting go of our ideas of what a normal marriage or a normal family or a normal career looks like. and helping one another to be the absolute best we can be.
Now, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. If we hold fast to the fundamental views of the past, you know, we're like stuck in a hard shell, and our bodies are growing, and this hard shell of fundamental view just keeps us in pain. So break free of the shell and allow those different ideas to come up, different ideas of what a family looks like, of a marriage looks like, of what does a career look like. All of these things are up for grabs.
That's right. That's right. And pardon me. Now, Bernard Morin, you've mentioned him a few times. Is he in Canada, or where is he located?
Sorry, say that again?
Where's Bernard Morin?
Oh, Bernard, he's in Canada right now. He does travel a bit, but he's located in Canada, yeah.
Okay. Do you do any traveling and speaking? Are you on a speaker circuit?
No, not yet.
Not yet. You hope to be, I hope.
It could happen. Perhaps this interview will fuel something like that. I'm not sure.
Well, I certainly hope so. Like I say, I honor the work that you're doing, and I honor who you are. I think it's phenomenal that you've really allowed yourself to develop so many skills, you know, towards the end of what we call service to others. So, Paul, thanks so much for being on with me this morning. It's been a true pleasure.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor.
Okay. Well, listeners, it's the weekend.